From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. We are in a gap right now between the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, which wrapped up last week, and a confirmation vote, which isn't yet scheduled. In that gap are a few storms. A storm over that anonymous op-ed published last week in the New York Times, and a new storm over Bob Woodward's new book to be released Tuesday. It's titled Fear, Trump in the White House. And that's where we begin our weekly chat with the political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, Beth.
So Bob Woodward's book isn't out yet, but in excerpts, it documents incidents within the White House in recorded interviews with people he knows and he can identify. What's your take on this book?
Well, you know, Bob Woodward, as we've seen in all the books he's done in the past of previous presidents, he does have a stellar reputation. He does get people to talk. And, you know, something I think for all the pushback by Trump and loyalists to his administration are pushing back against it. It sounds like everything that we're the irony, I guess, is that everything we're reading in the book, or at least in the excerpts of the book, are not surprising. I mean, as we're talking about an administration in dysfunction, that's just not working, that a president who seems just out of touch and not curious, and a lot of dishonesty being spread in the administration. It seems, again, not unusual, but I think the fact, I'm hearing an echo of myself, but what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing in the book, though, is that an administration that just seems to be not telling the truth and not working well with others.
Ken, he said today, Bob Woodward did on the Today Show, this is Trump talking, acting, and deciding. And here's some of the conclusion from Bob Woodward as he told Savannah Guthrie.
Well, I've never seen an instance when the president is so detached from the reality of what's going on.
So he's comparing this president to the many, many administrations that he's covered and the many interviews he's done about the different administrations. I'm going to ask you, Ken, a question that I've asked you before, most recently with Omarosa's book. What is the importance of this? And I'll say that adding that Bob Woodward is framing this as it pertains to national security and intelligence.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think there, of course, is the Michael Wolff book, The Fire and Fury, and the Omarosa book, and James Comey wrote a book. And with this book, I'm not sure if it says so much about national security and intelligence as it does about competence and honesty. So I think what's interesting about this book is, one, as I said earlier, Woodward's stellar reputation for getting to the facts. But the fact that it's all in one, I think when you have the book coming in within a day of the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, it just seems like it's just showing that, look, even with President Nixon and President Reagan and all the conflicts and the rivalries that went on within the administration, there was never the complete disdain for the president that I'm seeing now. And so whatever you want to make about people plotting against the president, about stealing things off his desk so he can't implement them into policy, I mean, that's unprecedented. So whatever you think about the stuff we've heard about in the past, I think Woodward, I agree with Woodward. We've never seen anything like this, especially with a president who was just so widely disdained by so many people he brought into his own administration.
You're referencing an incident described in the book in which Gary Cohen lifted a document from the president's desk. He said, as a protectionist move. But let's listen to a little bit more of what Bob Woodward said this morning on the Today Show relative to what we're talking about.
This country does some things in the intelligence world which are so important to protect the country. They are astonishing. They are a secret. They are called special access programs. And he jeopardizes them. He jeopardizes the position in the economy by doing things that experts, you know, 99.9% of the people say, don't do tariffs. It doesn't work. He's got it in his head. And when people challenge him, he'll say, oh, I've had those ideas for 30 years. You're wrong.
Savannah Guthrie asked Bob Woodward, do you think the president is unwilling, incapable? And I don't know if you heard the interview, Ken, but he said, listen, I describe what happened. And that's what journalism is. There are some conclusions.
Exactly. And that's what Bob Woodward does better than I mean, sometimes in previous books, Bob Woodward will reach conclusions and perhaps editorialize. But I think the most damning thing about Donald Trump is that what Woodward's doing is basically saying what happened from those involved in the administration. And when you mentioned what Gary Cohn allegedly did by removing stuff from the president's desk. Not only was Gary Cohn, you know, the former head of the chief economic advisor, not only was he seemed to be a likely source for much of what Woodward wrote about, but if you also look at the op-ed, the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, with so much focus on the president's betraying Republican principles and conservative principles by his views on trade. That was always a bugaboo for Gary Cohn. So I wonder, you know, in all the guessing game in Washington, who wrote that anonymous, you know, op-ed in the Times? Was it Dan Coats? Was it Don McGahn? I'm wondering if maybe it was Gary Cohn because he seemed to write it, even though he's a former administration official. The New York Times identified this person as an administration official, so I don't know if that means present or former. But a lot of things he wrote about, especially regarding trade and economic stuff, almost seems to point to the direction of Gary Cohn. But who knows? You know, it's so funny.
So Ken,
everybody's asking everybody. They're all denying it. But of course they're all denying it because they wrote it anonymously.
Right.
So when they say, Mike Pence, did you do it? He'll say no. You know, Dan Coats, did you do it? No.
Well, Mike Pence said he'd take a lie detector test over it. His no was that emphatic.
First of all, Mike Pence seems to be the least likeliest of anybody to do it. Mike Pence, you know, is just the way he's described in the book, and he's described in another book by Michael D'Antonio about how almost subservient he is to the president, how he'll just sing his praise at every cabinet meeting. Mike Pence is the last person on my list.
So Savannah Guthrie asked Bob Woodward whether he thought the anonymous op-ed could have been written by anyone that he, Woodward, spoke to for the book, to your point about Gary Cohn. He said, none of my sources are anonymous. I know who I talk to. They talk to me. Gary Cohn's name is in the book. So he said he doesn't believe that's the case.
No. That's not what he's saying. I think what he's saying is that if you the difference between anonymous and the people he's talked to is that Woodward said, look, I know who I talk to. So the people who gave me insight, including Gary Cohn, I mean, in other words, it doesn't whether Gary Cohn wrote the op-ed or not is not what Woodward is saying. Woodward is saying that unlike the New York Times guy, I know who I spoke to, and that includes people like Gary Cohn. I don't think he's really discussing.
Oh, we heard that a little differently. So you think it's possible then, and you already said this, that Gary Cohn could have written the op-ed?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially given the focus on economic issues and trade issues, which, again, is in Cohn's bailiwick. Yeah, absolutely could be that. But again, you know, everybody, of course, denies it. When Mark Felt, who was the deputy director of the FBI during Watergate, who turned out to be Deep Throat, we didn't learn that until decades later. But when he was asked, he said, absolutely not. So, of course, they'll all say no. It just seems so funny that everybody seems to have breaking news that Joe Schmo or Mary Schmo said that, no, they were not anonymous. But of course, they'll deny it because that's why they wrote the article, the op-ed to begin with, to be anonymous. Or as the president would say, onimus. I think that's what he said. He couldn't pronounce the word onimus in a rally, and it was kind of funny.
Well, we've all had trouble with words, Ken, so.
Not me, no. I don't mean to be anti-semantic,
I'm not going to act that I don't get tripped up too, so especially on that word. I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Let's look back at George Papadopoulos being sentenced. He'll spend 2 weeks in jail, right?
2 weeks in jail, which is, you know, probably more than most. But I mean, basically, he lied to the FBI. He repeatedly lied to the FBI when he was interviewed by them in January of 2017. And in a lot of this investigation into Russia, the FBI said he just really threw them off the track. And it was really detrimental to what they were trying to accomplish. But at the same time, George Papadopoulos is allegedly cooperating with Mueller and the investigation. So he got more of a sentence than most people do, but 14 days, I think the severity of what he did made him deserve the jail sentence. But the fact that he is allegedly cooperating with the investigation makes us think that he may be a more pivotal figure than just somebody who's sentenced for 2 weeks in prison.
And now to the Supreme Court confirmation hearings, which have wrapped up. Can you believe they're this far down our list of topics today?
Well, you know something, every week we say that, you know, we would say, let's see if there's a lot to talk about next week. And there's so much to talk about. And the Kavanaugh nomination is certainly one of us. But here's what's interesting. For all that we've seen with Brett Kavanaugh in the several days of hearings, when he was blistered by the Democrats and a love fest from the Republicans, for all what seems to be questions about his honesty and his memory and his philosophy and his record, when all is said and done, what changed? And I don't know what changed. We do know, or we think we know, that maybe Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar are running for president. We kind of established that. But did we change any senators' minds? And that's a good question. So ultimately, if the goal of the Democrats was to get two pro-choice Republicans, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, to consider voting no, if that didn't happen, and I'm not sure if it did, then ultimately for all the vitriol and the anger and the back and forth between the two sides, I don't know what really changed in that, and which means that Brett Kavanaugh is likely to become the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court.
Well, it has to happen by a vote. We don't know yet when that vote is coming, right?
Right. I mean, the new Supreme Court term starts October 1st. Mitch McConnell has said often that there will be a vote in time for him to join the court by October 1st. And I'm assuming anytime, you know, perhaps the last week of September or even sooner. I mean, there will still be a debate in the Senate. But unless we get some kind of a signal from Collins and Murkowski, because you need two Republicans now to vote no, or you need two Republicans to vote no, even if all the Democrats stay on board, then we have some action and activity and suspense. Barring that, I don't think anything changes. And you still have the specter of possibly Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Joe Donnelly of Indiana, maybe another Democrat, voting yes. They also voted yes for Neil Gorsuch. So, again, you know, he was dented. There was a lot of arrows aimed at him, but he seems to have survived, at least as of the confirmation hearings in the Judiciary Committee.
All right, Ken, we have primaries that we can talk about. I'm going to save that for next week and kind of wrap it up right here with us being, as I said from the beginning, somewhat in the gap with storms approaching and all around us, right?
Yeah, unless there's another major story that we're going to have to deal with next week. It happens every week, doesn't it?
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Beth.
That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.